Rudolf Steiner was once asked for a short, concise characterization of what evil is, and his answer was perhaps shorter than his questioner expected. He said simply, "Evil is good at the wrong time." Evil is good at the wrong time. Quite a thought, and it helps us understand in its typical paradoxical, oxymoronic way that there is a deep connection between good and evil, and it helps us understand once again why Rudolf Steiner adds the element of time so often, that this is so often what is different about his take on a given teaching, a given picture. It's something that often separated him from the theosophists when he worked with them in the early 1900s. And it certainly is something that's very different from many modern teachers of spiritual development who picture a world that is eternal, unchanging, that is the desirable world, whereas we have the Maya, the illusion, the hang-ups that are all connected to a world in which time seems to matter. So, what is time? And what do we mean by the wrong time and the right time? And how does Rudolf Steiner distinguish these two, or how does he help us distinguish the two? That will be an important theme, an overarching theme, as we look into some of the descriptions that Steiner gives of the evolution of the world and of mankind. Now, I've spoken of the hierarchies in other segments of this course, and the way in which they themselves have evolved and continue to evolve, and the differences between the way they have developed and the way we are developing right now. And as I've pointed out in many places in this course, and will point out again, the importance of the fact that we are living in conditions on the earth of mineralization, that the substance of our physical body is completely mineralized. And thus we tend to see the world, not only our own world, but other worlds, the planets, the starry world, the universe, in mineral terms. We are assuming always that everything, whether it be in a solid state, liquid state, gaseous state throughout the universe, which is mostly gaseous according to what we're told, but all of that is still basically, they are states of matter, they are states of mineral matter. It was not always so, Steiner says, that the mineralization processes that we know today are of relatively new appearance, and other states preceded them. Now, there's hardly anything that Steiner spoke about more than evolution, and certainly the first part of his career as an esotericist between the years 1900 and 1914, he took up this theme again and again. And its fullest treatment is given in his remarkable book that used to be called Occult Science. I think it's now called Esoteric Science, but it's sort of the so-called textbook of anthroposophy, in which he takes up pretty much all of the important themes, many of which he was to develop still further. So there is the description of the evolution of the earth and humanity in its fullness, though interestingly enough, some years later, when he gave a lecture cycle entitled The Inner Realities of Evolution, he said that what he gave in Occult Science, difficult, powerful, and grand though it is, was only the maya of evolution, the outer show, as it were. And in the inner realities, he gives us something of the psychological responses of the hierarchies to the evolutionary deeds that they were performing, sort of what they were going through as they created this great outer show of evolutionary stages. So between occult science and the inner realities of evolution, you get a very full picture. And then in many of the earlier lecture cycles, such as the Gates of Spiritual Science, Steiner took up the theme of evolution again, and often in a much more skeletal outline way. That's often a good start to look at those lectures before trying to go into the very, very dense prose of occult science. And then it's referred to again and again in many other ways. So we're going to look at evolution to help us understand a few things. Number one, to help us again shed more light, another perspective on the fourfold and the sevenfold human being, to give us another lens through which to understand our relationship to the beings of the hierarchies. Secondly, to take up a theme to which I have alluded but not yet really touched on, one of the central nerves of the anthroposophical worldview, the question of evil. That's why I began with this question, what is evil? And we can only understand Steiner's portrayal of evil, which is a pretty unique portrayal by and large, again, compared to most any spiritual teacher. This can only be understood by getting a handle on the evolutionary panorama that he presents to us. And third, last but not least by any means, to understand the Christ impulse, as Steiner called it. Who is Christ? What is Christ? What is the Christ principle and the Christ impulse? And why does Steiner connect that to the evolutionary impulse that lives in the universe and the human being? So these are some of the grandest and the deepest themes. These are particularly Steiner's relationship to evil and good, and the things that Steiner has said about Christianity, and particularly the Christ being. And believe me, he doesn't always equate the two by any means. These have proven to be some of the most difficult aspects of Steiner's work to fathom, and they remain among the most controversial. And that's saying a lot, because there's hardly anything nowadays about Steiner's teachings that don't seem to be sort of mired in controversy. And of course, this is especially all that that seethes and swirls around Waldorf schools, and particularly those Waldorf schools that are in the public domain. You know, are we teaching Christianity? Are we doing demonic dancing, as eurythmia is sometimes called? And what is the role of evil? And how does Steiner really face it? He seems to have something able to offend just about everyone. And also in the question of evolution, woven together with questions of reincarnation, come the whole plethora of issues around Steiner's purported racism and anti-Semitism, which is an issue that will not die, no matter how many statements are made by anthroposophical societies in the United States and abroad, no matter how many wonderful, beautiful mission statements and statements of non-discrimination are issued by Waldorf schools. somehow or other, one keeps seeing this issue coming up again and again, particularly on the internet. So here we are on the internet, and this will also be one of the things that I will address as part of this picture of evolution. But I can assure you, you are not going to leave this segment, which goes on for quite a while, as you'll see, feeling, oh, that's so clear. Now I understand. It's so much better. Oh, yeah, that's all exaggerated. It's complicated. It's nuanced. And in a way, Steiner, as he said, you know, the easy thing was getting into the spiritual world and communing with spiritual beings. The hard thing was communicating it to my fellow men and women in language that they could understand, but language that has been so used for so long to express the realities of the material world only that it is almost impossible in some ways to make himself clear. So we have to deal with this. And of course, we are also speaking about Steiner and interpreting Steiner in English. And he spoke and wrote in German. And I've been reminded of that fact by any number of fluent German speakers and Germans and Austrians and so on, how inferior our representation is of what Steiner said was already inferior to begin with. So this is tricky because in our particular linguistic pattern and our semantic parameters of today, things tend to be either or most of the time. Just look at the world of politics right now. Anywhere in the world, but in America in particular, it's always either or. In the spiritual world, it is always both and. And that's very tricky. We can say we agree with that, but the reality as a part of us is always tending to be nudged one way or the other. And this is why Steiner works so strongly with polarities, which seem to contradict each other or neutralize each other, but actually are always working towards a synthesis. There's always this triad that he is seeking to help us to come to in our perception of things and also in understanding how the universe actually functions. So these are some of the issues, the challenges that we will face. But I hope that you'll feel, as we go through this evolutionary progression, that it's well worth the trip, that the journey is indeed no less important than the goal.